How good does it get, SK?
Why not us, Troy?
Today, live from the Pinecrest Inn, it's the Smiley Show. So long, everybody.
This is the Smiley Show.
All right, guys, we are happy to welcome in eight-time PGA Tour champion, also a major champion, Keegan Bradley. Keegs, you've been on the PGA Tour now for, I guess, is this like the 16th year or 15th year you're entering the PGA Tour? I mean, 16. I mean, it's just flown by.
It has. It's really strange. I remember talking to Camillo. It was like my second or third year, and he was telling me he'd been on tour for 10 years, and I couldn't believe that was even possible. And to be here at 16 is really, really, I'm really proud of that, because I feel like I've been pretty relevant for all 16 of them, which is, you know, tough to do and something I'm really proud of.
Well, let's talk about this season, 2026, Keegs. Why don't you just give us an update on how you feel like the game has progressed throughout the year? I mean, it's crazy that we're almost a quarter of the way through this season.
Yeah, so I got off to like just a horrific start. To be honest with you, the Ryder Cup just took so much out of me, and I really wasn't myself. I just now in the past like month, I've started to feel normal again, and I started to feel like, you know, I'm going out and I'm focusing on what I'm doing, and I feel more of who I had been and who I was last year. And, you know, the beginning of the year was a struggle. I didn't play very well. You know, you have to play well at these elevated events. So, you know, but I played really well at the Masters, and then played really well at Hilton Head. So we're trending in the right direction with some good courses coming.
So talk about just your game last season, Keegs, because it's so interesting. You did so many things so well. You know, I look at your around the green stats, your iron play, but you mentioned just being the Ryder Cup captain and all the things you had to handle with those responsibilities. Did you feel like you had two brains on at all times? You know, you got your thinking brain over here trying to sort through the Ryder Cup, but then also your golf brain. I mean, did you almost shock yourself looking back at how well you were playing?
Yeah, I think so. I had this philosophy of when I was inside the ropes, I was just a player. And then when I left the ropes, even in player dining and stuff, I would be the captain and play my role there. So, you know, I was able to sort of leave the captaincy out when I was playing. And I had these like almost two separate lives, even like two separate personalities. And I did a really good job of separating the two. And in a weird way, it may have even been an advantage, because, you know, I wasn't hyper focused on, you know, maybe a shot that I hit that day or shots I had to hit. I was worried about, okay, I got a call with this guy tonight. I got dinner mm-hmm. with the team on Tuesday night, and, you know, figuring out the course. And so in a way, I think it worked out. I did hit a wall at the end of the season. I was getting like really exhausted, because when you get closer to the Ryder Cup, more and more decisions being made. And, you know, that's when it got a little difficult. But for the beginning of the year, I did a great job separating the two.
Golf's hard enough as it is on the PGA Tour, Keegan. I mean, and when you're thinking about having to make calls to guys about not being on a team, that's tough mentally. That kind of wears on you. I could see, especially when we're playing the playoffs in August, it's not exactly the coolest time of the year. So mentally and physically just exhausted. So can totally understand that.
I was wasted at the Tour Championship. I the back nine of that, because I actually had a little look there. I had a chance. I got off to a
You and Russell were playing together. Week.
Yeah, and I on the back nine, I couldn't hit the ball. Like I was like my legs were gone. Like I had been doing a bunch of stuff that week, and it caught up to me there. But other than that, I did a great job of that.
Well, you definitely hit it well. I think I was walking with you that Sunday. I think you were playing with Russell Henley, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. We were right in it. And then I hit a wall. It was like no other feeling I've ever had on the course, honestly, because like I was like, oh boy, this is like I can't. But I scraped it around. I did a great job. It's one of the proudest rounds I've had in a while, because I hung in there. I birdied 18. I've got up and down from like 140 yards. I was proud of that.
In the Atlanta heat, I mean, it was hot that entire playoff stretch with Memphis, also up in Baltimore. Just a very, very challenging, mentally exhausting stretch. And growing up in the Northeast, obviously, Keegs, you grew up in a lot of cold weather climate, not playing a full calendar year, maybe like some of us here in the South. For you, you know, growing up and then making the transition to St. John's, like, when did you feel like you were a full-time player when it comes to golf, and just with all the changing conditions as far as weather goes at an early age?
Yeah, so, you know, believe it or not, going to school in New York and St. John's, the season was way longer than I had ever had. I know it's only 3 or 4 hours or 5 hours from Vermont, but like the season was longer. Like it did extend, but it was still terrible. But like, you know, I could still, like, we would play in horrific weather. It didn't matter. Like, we were just going to play as long as we could. But growing up, you know, I had these definite seasons of sports, and I had to put the golf clubs away. And so I had this sense of urgency when the weather was nice or where I could play. And that carried on with me even to this day. I still have that sense of urgency of, like, got to get my work done, got to do this now. And then I moved to Florida after St. John's to play the Hooters tour. I moved to Orlando. And all of a sudden now I'm playing all year round. And like I drastically improved. Like I improved a ton because I still had that mentality of like a finite time period, but I didn't have it. Like I still maximized every day. And I still had that sort of thought of how I had it. All of a sudden now I'm playing all year round. And it did make a big difference. And also, you know, I think the years of me not playing all year round, I started to beat guys that did because they sort of maybe burned out or whatever. But the guys that were all beating me when I was younger, I started to catch up to pretty quick.
Well, you had tons of success at St. John's, winning 9 times there. And especially, first off, some of the guys on this team, like Mike Ballow, got to know him through over the years, whether mini tour golf, seeing him on the road. Up, of course, he's up in the PGA golf professional world now, doing a great job. And of course, I have to text Mike and say, hey, you got anything for Keegs? Like, you need to ask him about the van rides. And I think most people, I go back to this. There was this famous interview with a player at Boston College coming off the NCAA. Yeah, I think the Boston College basketball was terrible. And they said, what are your memories from the year? It's like going out to eat. And so it just made me think about like just van rides. It's just part of being a collegiate athlete, you know, going van rides, going out to eat with the guys.
It's truly like I can't even really remember shots that I hit. Like I can't, like I remember being so stressed out about golf and thinking that this was, you know, the life or death. And all I would love to do is go back and hang out and go on a van ride, go to, you know, which we used to have tournaments in Florida. So we would play tournaments in the spring, quote unquote, for us, fully winter. Like we hadn't played any golf. Like I used to hit balls in the batting cages at St. John's in the winter. And we wouldn't even fly to Florida. We would drive, we'd get in the van and drive overnight, you know, get there. Term starts on Wednesday, get there on Tuesday, like overnight, like zero prep. But I remember those times, like what I would do to go on a golf day with the guys and do, you know, drive out to Long Island to play and then find an amazing like pizza place, eat pizza there and hang out. Some of the best memories of my life for sure.
And didn't y'all used to sneak out to Bethpage too on Mondays? Like, wasn't that the thing? You'd park over there behind like the maintenance at the third hole and then just sneak out, do a little loop.
Yeah. So we used to, Craig Currier was superintendent and he used to let us play on Mondays when it was closed. And it was cool because there'd be cups in the hole, but no pins. So you'd play a match and you'd get the ball in the green and you'd be like either, you know, tight or whatever. So it was cool. I had a lot of incredible memories at Bethpage playing like deep into the fall, into the winter, like where it's Bethpage is hard enough and playing it's like fleeting rain. But some incredible memories. I cherish my time at St. John's so much. Like there's an office quote where Andy Bernard says, you know, something along the lines of, I wish you knew the good times when you were in them or something like that. And like, I look back on those times and those guys, I wouldn't do anything for them, but I look back at those as some of the best of my life. And, you know, I was still chasing my dream of playing on tour, which just was pretty ridiculous at St. John's in New York City. But, you know, it was part of the journey of getting there is, you know, being with these guys, the people that I met there that helped me get better, helped me improve. I worked in a club after I graduated called Wheatley Hills. Without Wheatley Hills, I wouldn't make the tour. I met guys there, Dr. Glenn Morocco. Like these guys would, I was dead broke, and they would like pass around a hat and like give me, you know, some money to go play mini tours and took care of me, bought me. I was driving this horrible old Ford Focus car, and I had to duct tape the mirror on the side of the car. If I went too fast, they would fly off. And they bought me a new car. Like, you know, part of the journey, you know, isn't always go to Georgia, go to Florida, win the USAM and they get on the tour. Like, there's people like me that went a different route. And I think about how lucky I was to go to St. John's instead of maybe a Florida, because it's part of my process and part of the people that I met. You know, the people that I met there were a big piece of why I got to where I am today.
Well, we see the Srixon hat that you're wearing now. Just talk about your recruitment coming out of college, you know, going to a Big East school. It's not a powerhouse golf school like a Georgia or a Texas, but still you won 9 times, clearly can win at the collegiate level. But who was the first person to reach out and say, hey, I think this guy can make it to the next level?
Yeah, so this is Cleveland at the time, but, you know, Srixon, I was buying clubs and like, whatever club I bought, I would use. It was like, not like, oh, this isn't spinning right. I mean, let me get another one. It was like,
I'm just going to figure it out.
Right. I better fade it and make it spin more. Like, you know. And I remember this one time I finally got an invite to the Northeast Amateur, which is like, you know, for us growing up in New England, it's the Masters of amateur golf, basically. They never would invite me. And I had been trying to get a driver from a certain company for years. Like I've used in, I see the guy that I'm texting to get a driver and he's got a handful of drivers for this one player. And I was just like, I was so upset. I was so bummed out because another part of my story is I never felt like I was getting the respect. It puts into the, it kind of fuels mm-hmm. the fire, but Mike Dunphy, man, my sophomore year, me and my teammate, George Zelotis, and he like sent George a hybrid or something. And I was like, geez, I wonder if he'd send me clubs. Again, I had done pretty well, but like, we're not getting free stuff.
Yeah.
And I texted Mike Dunphy, sent me a whole set of clubs and like talked to me and like got me fitted right. Like, again, like, what are you looking for in a golf club? I'm like, I don't care. Like, anything free, I'm going to use. Would you want to use the golf ball? I'm like, yeah, free, of course. Yeah. And it was a big turning point in my career, honestly, because I was able to get better equipment and equipment that fit me better. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was really important. And to be honest with you, it really helped. I felt like someone was taking me seriously. And somebody was like, I see potential in this person. And, you know, Mike Dunphy meant so much to me. My second Masters, I had a caddy for me in par three as like a thank you for all he had done for me. And I've been with him. I'm going to be with him over 20 years. Or maybe I am now. I've been with him since I'm 19 and I'm 39 now. So, you know, something that I'm really proud of. And I'm really grateful that they did this for me, because nobody was at the time. And back then, people were getting clubs easily and stuff all the time. And I'm forever grateful for Mike Dunphy and Srixon Cleveland. They've been incredible to me.
You know, he grew up just a hole and a half away from me, Mike Dunphy, and he's been giving me Cleveland wedges since I was 10 years old. But I still remember in college, or I should say high school, because you turned pro. Was it 2011 is when you turned pro? Is that about right?
In the tour. I got on the tour in 2011, yeah.
And so you turned pro. You were there to 08
I graduated,
in St. John's?
Yeah, I graduated St. John's in 08, turned pro, played the mini tours for a year. Yeah.
Yes, I was in high school, and I remember Mike coming up and saying, just watch out for this Keegan Bradley kid. I just got a feeling about this guy. He's just so he's from up from the Northeast. He's won 9 times. And guess what? Nobody else cares about this guy, and he's going to be a major winner. You watch. And like, that's like when he believes in somebody like that, like that's Mike. And
it's so good. Dump just said, like, I try to stay. After the Ryder Cup, I've tried to stay off social media really and not look around and not read articles, because if I read a bad article, I go into like a depression because it's like so fresh. And Dunphy every now and then will send me an article about some commentator. He just sent me one about some writer that's retiring and said something horrible about me. And I'm like, well, what did he say? Like, I didn't click on the link, but he's still sending me this stuff to get me fired up. I love it. I'm trying not to see it, but he said it to me. It's the best.
Oh man, there's nobody that you want in your corner more than that guy, right?
No, he's somebody you want in your corner, and he is a wild man. I just love him. He's if you put together like the most important figures of my career, he would be on the list.
Yeah.
Like if you put together a Mount Rushmore of like people who helped me get to where I am, he would be on the list for sure.
What would be your first impressions? You mentioned the golf ball, talking about Mike sending you the golf ball, Strixon. Can you just talk a little bit about how the golf ball has evolved for you from when you turned pro until now in 2026, where you have multiple options and of course, just how good it really is in the wind?
Yeah, so I would just use whatever I was given at the time. I didn't realize how spin deficient I was, when I played. I am really low spin, like really low, including the first time I got on the launch monitor, I was spinning my driver like 1400. I had no idea.
You're a high ball hitter, which is surprising to me. Yeah, that's very odd.
It's strange because I have trouble getting drivers that have enough spin. I use almost 11 degrees at my driver. If I have 9, it'll go 10 feet off the ground. It's insane. But I heard this quote from Tiger, and I've spoken to him about this. He always said, I can always take spin off the ball. I can never add spin on. And it's always stuck with me because spin is control, especially with irons. Mm-hmm. And so I've sort of lived by that motto of, okay, if I can hit an 8-iron 140 if I need to, but I can't stop one on, 15 at Augusta when it's rock hard if the spin isn't right. So I sort of live off that motto. And then the last, I don't know how old the Z-Star Diamond is, but the Z-Star Diamond was sort of a newer ball in the last 5 to 10 years.
Yeah.
And so I used the Z-Star forever. I won a major with it. It's like it's the softest ball you could ever play. Like it's like, mm-hmm. like it almost feels like a bouncy ball when you hit it. Mm-hmm. And then they came out with this Diamond and it was so much better in the wind. It's so much better off the driver. It's faster. And it combined both those worlds.
Yes.
And then so I'm able to, I need to spin with my irons because if I start in the driver, if I start to not spin the ball enough, my tendency is to start to back up and lift the ball in the air. And then that filters through my bag and I start playing like really poorly. So I need the spin to play well.
And interesting enough, like looking at your stats last year, Keegan, top 10 around the greens. And I looked back 10 years prior to that. It was far and above your best year around the greens. What do you think the reason was for that?
So at the end of each year, I really try to look at what I can improve at stat-wise. And chipping was glaring. I was never a bad chipper, but I was never a great chipper. And then the one thing that I've noticed through the years, I've never seen a great player. I've never seen a top player that's not a great chipper. Like it's insane. Like people don't realize Scottie Scheffler might be the best chipper in the world. Yeah. And like I go around, I play with Justin Thomas. I say this to him all the time. I go, I don't know how you ever make a bogey because he chips it to a foot every time he plays. And so I made this effort to like overhaul my chipping. I never worked on technique with chipping ever. That was never a thing growing up. It was always like feel and like there was never like no one ever told me how to swing a chip. And believe it or not, that somebody that I think JT is to me probably the best chipper I've ever seen, but the other person that I played a lot of golf with that I thought was the best I'd ever seen was Jamie Lutmark. And he is, every time I play with him, it was so incredible. And he would never hit like big flops or, and so I tailor made my chipping motion after Jamie. And I would talk to him a lot. My coach, Darren May, we would like analyze how he did it, and how I did it. And so I tried getting pretty technical, but I tried to get my chip where I'm hooking every chip. Mm. I'm taking it out. I wanted the club outside my hands, both sides. And what I found was the spin was way more consistent. It was coming out more consistent. That's the most important thing with chipping is like, it's going to do the same thing every time. So the only thing that you're really measuring is the firmness of the greens and the break. And I was getting a much more consistent chip with feeling this hook sort of vibe where I almost feel like I'm doing a figure eight with my swing. And like overnight, especially out of the rough, I really helped it immediately. And I'm really proud of that stat because there's a lot of really great chippers. I remind JT a lot that I finished much higher than him in strokes gained around the green. I just recently reminded him a couple days ago. But I really think like you know, for me, I guess I'm like one of the older players now, but like, we never worked on technique for chipping ever.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I talk to great chippers, they're super technical with their chipping motion, like super technical. And, you know, so I added that aspect into my chipping and it helped it pretty quick.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I'm looking at your set, your what's in the bag, and you have a combo set. You got the ZXI five irons from 3 to 5. You got the ZX7 Mark II irons from 6 to 9. You have a pitching wedge that's a forge. So, and then you also, your RTZ wedges go 52, 55, and 58. At one point, did you ever feel like you needed to get to a 60 degree? Did you ever feel like you were missing that loft or spin around the greens and just seeing guys hit shots? Thinking that, gosh, do I need that? Do I need to go switch to something with more?
I do. Yes, I've had that thought. But I've also used the 58 my whole life. And believe it or not, I base all of my yardages off my 58. So if I have full swings, but I also have three very swings. So my ear to ear with my 58, if I feel like it goes ear to ear, it goes 92 yards.
Same number for me.
Is it? Okay. Yes. And then, so I know with my ear to ear with a 9 iron goes 146. I know my shoulder shoulder goes 89 with my 58, and it goes shoulder shoulder with, you know, my 9 iron goes 143. So like I work on those numbers a ton with that 58. Mm-hmm. And so like I feel like I've gotten so good at those numbers with that club and knowing how far the ball goes. I didn't want to change that, especially with the way I was playing. But when I do go out and, you know, have a chipping contest with JT or a good chipper and they got that 62 degree, it does cross my mind. But I guess I'm still old school in that way that I keep the 58.
Well, it's nice when you got the Z-Star Diamond Ball, which definitely is nice around the greens, give you a little bit extra spin. It's always good when it's Z-Star, and you're going to have that golf ball in play at Aronimink coming up here for the second major of the year. And we have to give a lot of thanks to the PGA of America for sending over some incredible flyover footage of Aronimink. We're going to go hole by hole. This is a exercise we recently did with Bones at Augusta National, where we kind of broke down hole by hole what to look for at this next major championship. So Keegan, this is a stomping grounds at Aronimink you're very familiar with. You won in 2018 at the BMW Championship. We're back 8 years later. I'll bring Charlie in now to help bring up this flyover for this first hole. And just a quick reminder, we are going to be on site at Aronimink. Charlie and I are going to be calling shots, the PGA Championship, the Range Show, powered by T-Mobile. That'll be streaming Wednesday through Sunday on the PGA Championship YouTube channel, so look out for that. So Keegan, here we are. Hole number one, Aronimink. It's a par 70 golf course. I just went through the place. You just recently went on a trip with JT. Talk to us about this golf course.
Yeah, so I just was here. It's in incredible shape, stunning, actually, considering what time of year it is. This is a par four, depending on the width. Actually, the course was really firm when I played a couple days ago, but these bunkers on the right weren't in play for me when I played. So it's you just rip driver up at these right bunkers, and you have a wedge in. And then the green, just like most of the holes at Aronimink, the green is where it gets tricky. This green is really slopey back to front. And you could get one to spin, it's going to come all the way down off this fairway. What I find at Aronimink is these back pins are really tough because you got to get it back there because of the slope. But the long, there's a lot of like where you just go over and it's long. So you can see there's a little runoff over the green.
Yeah, it's definitely a theme that I picked up on this golf course. Gil Hands, of course, was part of this restoration project. And as we head to the second hole, it's a dogleg par 4, 413-yard hole. And one of the things that I've noticed about this course is that it's not particularly long. It feels like to me, you know, there's a lot of par 4s in that 420 to 460-yard range where you're kind of given options off the tee.
Yeah, the opening holes are really short here. So these bunkers on the left aren't really in play, wind dependent. You know, I think you're going to see guys that are going to get up near close to this green. It was a little into the wind when we played, and we hit it past this bunker. I had, you know, 85 yards in, but like these bunkers aren't going to be in play for Rory or some of the longer guys, and they're going to be able to just whack it up here. But again, the green gets really tricky. Again, there's these pins on the right. There's a back to front there, and then again over this green is a big runoff onto this other tee, and like you're just chipping it on the green from there. You're not getting it up and down.
How much does it help, like seeing that the runoffs of what you're going to be facing for a couple weeks, to where you can now kind of go work on these shots over the next couple weeks at these signature events?
Definitely. It's great because, you know what you're going to get. But also, you could putt a lot of these. So, I think you'd practice a lot of up and overs from the fairway. But, you know, these opening holes that are Dominic are really gettable. So, you know, you're going to want to go out and get these holes. I could see guys laying back here. This front right pin over this bunker, I don't think you'd hit driver because you could get too close. It all depends on how firm the greens are. When I played there, when I won there in 2018, it was like crazy wet. So like none of these shots were that similar. But, you know, these holes that you really got to take, you're going to have to take advantage of early on.
Yeah, it might be a different type of spin control depending on what the weather will be at the PGA Championship. Whether it's adding a bunch of spin, it sounds like the BMW 2018, it was about keeping spin off of the golf ball. So hoping for fast test.
It's interesting because, again, when it's soft, these back pins get even harder because you're having to hit like 9 irons for 120. And I remember I was playing with somebody in the final group with somebody here, and they hit it over this into that little thing, and you're done.
All right, third hole, 455-yard par four. Straight away. Some of these tees, Keeg, is it like it feels like you can't see a lot of these fairways? Like, does it feel kind of pinched from the tee boxes at times?
Yeah, definitely. You can't see any of these bunkers. You see those bunkers. Those aren't really in play, these left ones.
Yeah, okay. But it's a sightline thing, right?
It's a sightline thing. And the thing is that we noticed kind of if you hit it over this bunker, you can run into these far ones. But I played with Bud Cauley, and he was right up by those bunkers right there. Yeah. So, you know, it's going to be a tricky shot. I hit it in the right rough here and was totally fine. The rough wasn't that bad, but there's a back right section to the green where you would not want to be in this right rough. This back section is very slopey. And we thought if that pin is there, you're better off being super aggressive to that pin. Even if it goes long, it's okay because there's a big ridge to the left of this, to the left here, that if you get long over where that pin is, it's not good. Again, long is not in good shape. But if you hit the ball in the fairway here, you're going to have another little wedge in. Like, it's not going to be more than 120 to 150 yards.
All right. So far, I got us 300 through three right now, Keegan.
Yeah, I got us
penciled for three fairways hit, three easy birdies, and now we head over to the fourth hole, which is a similar distance to the third hole, 457-yard par four. Kind of seems like a theme of this golf course, right? When you only got two par fives, it's going to be a lot of par fours throughout.
Yeah, this is another sort of blind tee shot, and you're aiming at those big trees there. You got these bunkers here were not in play when we played. It was, I forget how far they were, but they weren't in play. And, you know, it's a totally blind fairway. But, you know, when we were there still 3 weeks prior, the rough wasn't that bad. So the rough was okay. But again, the green is really tricky. These pins to the right, especially, you know, over this bunker, it's tough to tell the undulation of how severe the green is. You know, you're going to have to hit shots into these to get it close.
Okay, and I it's hard not to see in the distance there how cool this next little short par three looks. It's a fifth hole, 159-yard par three, and it's so often, especially on a golf course that's littered with long par threes, it's great to have one that's just a short iron. So I imagine that, you know, with this green being guarded by a bunch of bunkers, how difficult and how slopey is this green?
Yeah, this is my favorite hole on the course. When we played it, the pin was right up front, and it was really great. I could see them doing something here where they make this hole like 110 yards and like really make a dicey pin. I could tell. It looked to me like they were saving this entire tee box. You know, they don't tell us, but it's just my guess. I'm guessing that they could make like one of these holes that the U.S. Open's been doing, where it's, you know, 90 yards, but, you know, diabolical pin. Again, these back pins, I feel like they're going to pepper the back edges of these greens because you can sort of see this severely sloped back to front. And there's all these different little pockets in these greens where you hit a good shot, you're going to, you know, it's going to be close. But if you hit it in the wrong section, you're going to have some up and over, some tough putts.
So you think in these first five holes that we're going to have a good chance that if you're hitting driver on all these holes, there's a good chance that you might have pitching wedge or less into all of them?
There's a lot of wedges. There's a ton of wedges because the next hole is going to be a wedge too. That, you know,
yeah. 1 or 2 yards, man.
Yeah, this next hole is they've added some bunkers on the left. So before you could sort of miss the fairway to the left and be okay. But you've got to take an aggressive line sort of at that big tree on the right and just hit it as hard as you can. Oh, wow.
That far right? Like near the cart path? Like you're talking.
You need to go, where that furthest right tree in the distance, not the one right here.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
The furthest right tree. So, you know, up over these cluster of bunkers.
Gotcha.
And, you know, these bunkers, I think the far ones through the fairway are new. So if it gets downwind, maybe it's tricky. You can hit them. And it was into the wind when we played it, so they weren't in play. But again, this is going to be, you know, 100 yards if you hit a good shot. You wouldn't want to hit it in these bunkers, that's for sure, because they're pretty nasty. But severely sloped front to back, back to front green, you know, really slopey. You're going to have to hit one with the right spin. These back pins, again, are tough because of the spin. But this, again, this is a birdie hole, if you hit a good drive. But the thing is, it always happens at these majors. You're like, oh, we can get this hole. And then you get to the to the tournament and the pins, you know, where the tour would put it 5 from the edge, it's 3 from the edge. And it's on top of a mound. And it's like, oh, you can't get it this close. So, you know, we were talking, we expected to see a lot of really, really difficult pins that in every green has them. And so it's sort of interesting to see a course that's, you know, an older course that's just like not freakishly long, but it's tough around the greens.
Do you think the defense of this golf course is first, the weather needs to be helpful in this golf course to protect it, to keep the fairways firm, to where you have to maybe make a couple more decisions. You know, if you get any rain, it sounds like it's just busting drivers around this place and then just go find it in the rough or take advantage from the fairways with short clubs.
For sure. I think, and you're going to have to be really dialed in your numbers. And then, you know, when we were there a couple days ago, and, you know, I grew up in the Northeast, Philly's way further south, but I've never seen a course in such great shape for, April. Awesome. And it was firm. It was, we almost didn't go because we were worried it was going to be too soft. And we got there. It was rock hard. And the fairways get way smaller when they're firm like this. I could see these first holes because they're all blind and they're all sort of sloping away. I could see these fairways if they got firm to be really tough to hit.
That's interesting. I think that's going to be a huge storyline of the week is how much weather they have to deal with if they have any. So let's go to 7. Another blind tee shot. Here we are. Where are you
hitting
it?
Another blind tee shot. This is a new tee. We unsure if this is driver or 3-wood so far. It's either 3-wood at this. It's cool. It's either 3-wood at this tree over here or driver over these bunkers or over these fescue. Mm-hmm. But again, this tough to see, but this is really sloped. So I think if you pound one down there, it's going to go in the rough, like for sure. So you might lay one up top here. If you hit driver though, you're getting way, way down there. We were thinking this might be 3-wood on top of this hill and you'd have 150 yards hit. This green is really tricky. I hit a bunch of chips over this green to the left, just in practice, and it's tough. And, there's a lot of, in the redesign, I guess, that what Gil Hans did over these bunkers, there's always a little downslope. So if they put the pins close to these bunkers, you can see it whacking off the back of the bunkers and going to 30 feet. This is another one where you have to be really precise in your iron shots.
Yeah, take me back a little bit, Charlie, back into the fairway, because I think this is probably my favorite design of the golf course. So go a little further. So for you know, if we're hitting driver up the right side, I love the mounting up the right and the way this green shapes, especially with what Keegan just talked about, with the slope on the backside of those front bunkers, missing right off this tee, you're pretty much destined, if it's a firm golf course, to be ending up over the green. And so it makes you feel like you have to miss left off this tee to have any chance. But to your point, Keegs, if the pin's up in the front, I love something like a spinny three wood to find the fairway to give yourself a full shot in.
And this up by the green, it's so severely sloped right to left, and it's tough to tell how big this slope is. If you hit one on the green and spin it, it's coming all the way down to the rough by that little house there.
Yeah, and what is that?
That will go to the house. Yeah, it'll go down in that right there, and you know it's 20 feet below the green. So you know that's another thing that you have to be careful of.
Go get some transfusions at this little turn house here.
Yes.
Things are, if you're a couple over through seven, head over there you get to the eighth hole, which is another beautiful, like seven and eight seem like the five, six, seven, eight. This is like a really fun part of the golf course, just visually. Yeah.
This is a really, really tough par three. I hit seven wood in here. I'd be at like 235. And then there's a huge over the screen. You can sort of see the different coloring of the grass there. So it's on the green, but that's going way off. And you're now over the green there, and you're chipping down. Like you couldn't stop it on the green. And like JT hit a great iron shot in there, and it just went over onto the downslope, but he had no chance.
Wow.
And then again, the big slope over this bunker. To these pins, and that back right pin, it's going to be tough. Like you really difficult to get close. This is one you're trying to make three on. And what, you know, I was telling my coach on this hole, one of the coolest moments of my career happened on this hole in 2018. Oh, yeah? I was making a run, and there was a big leaderboard like right here, and Tiger was on that other green. That's number 10. And so the pin was back right, and the pin on 10 was sort of back left. It was you're 30 feet from one another, and I'm looking at I had won in since 2012, and I'm looking at the leaderboard, and it's like I'm leading, and Tiger's in second, he's one behind me or whatever it was, and we're 30 feet from each other. He's got the red and black on, and we were like trying to decide who's gonna putt, and he kind of like gave me a point to like me go, and you know, there's 20,000 people around the screen, and I remember thinking like, this is awesome. Like this is the stuff that you dream about, where, you know, I'm leading, I'm contending for a tournament, and so is Tiger, and he's right there. And I'll never forget that moment, because it had been so long since I had really had a chance to win. And, you know, to see Tiger, and these younger guys don't know what it was like to see Tiger in that red and black. It was like you were looking at like a video game or something. Like it looked fake.
Uh-huh.
And it was cool. It was really, really a fun moment in my career.
Did you make the putt?
Of course I did. I beat him that day. I beat him. I won the tournament.
Are you surprised that you know, if he had a birdie putt from 10, well, I don't know what he was putting for, but are you a little surprised he gave you the nod? Cause that'd have been a nice gamemanship.
I didn't even think of that. Cause it was always really difficult to play with Tiger, because when he finished, the crowd would run. And the rumor was always, you know, if he liked you, he would finish. Who knows if that's true or not, but, and the advice I always got playing with Tiger at Phil as well is whenever you can finish, because the crowd's not there to watch you. They're there to get in position to watch Tiger or Phil. And so like there'd be times when you're playing with them where they'd finish or make a putt, and you're standing over a 3.5 footer, and it's madness around the green, cause they're running to the next shot. So, pretty cool. But this was awesome. It was one of those things that I had forgotten about. And when I got to the green, it like rushed back to me. It was cool.
Man, that's amazing. Incredible. All right, let's head over to the first par five of the golf course. Crazy that it takes 9 holes to get to the 605-yard par five. And I've seen a lot of birdie opportunities with wedges throughout this golf course. Well, what about this tee shot here at the ninth?
Yeah, so you have to hit this fairway. These bunkers on the left are fully in play. They're mm-hmm. exactly where I'm going to hit it. And then, you know, if it's downwind, the bunkers on the right are going to be in play. I hit a good drive. I couldn't reach. I hit three wood. I hit it in the fairway right next to these bunkers, and I hit three wood, and it barely covered this bunker on the right. I smoked it, too. I was wow. shocked where it went. And then this second shot is completely blind.
Oh, really?
Even up where I was over this bunker, you can't see any of the green.
No way.
I was playing a match against JT. I actually hit my wedge a little hard, and it hit the pin and went to like 4 feet. He was pissed.
I am aware of the outcome of the match. I didn't know who he was playing against. Good. There's another member of a group text that also lost that same day, but it was JT's loss was much better than the loss the other member had.
Yes. But this actually, when you get on this green, it's probably one of the flatter greens, but it's a really tricky,
subtle. You can see it from here almost.
Shot because you're seeing like half the pin. I always find that to be really tough on wedge shots or pitches when you can't see where you're landing it. But like this is a flatter green. This front right section is really tough. Like that's going to be a nasty little pin. It'd be really nice to get it up here if you could hit two and get it up here, but it would have to be downwind for me to get it up there too.
Interesting. All right, let's go to the backside here at 10, which I thought was when I was looking at the tee shot, really looks like it kind of narrows up based on what I could tell. Did it feel that way for you when you played back in 18 and then also the other day?
Yeah, so this is a new tee from when we played in 18. It's way further back. We played that tee up there. This is the same tee as one. And, this is one of the toughest holes on the course. So these bunkers are fully in play. If you hit it right, you're blocked out by those trees. But you have to challenge these bunkers on the right because this whole fairway is severely sloped right to left. They are rolling to the rough. And this is one of these tee shots where like you have to hit the fairway.
Because you don't hit carry the fairway, on the second too, right?
Yeah, if you don't hit the fairway, I don't think you can hit the green. And even if you do, if you go long, you're in such deep trouble here from that little pond. But interesting thing about Aramanik, I think this is the only hole you can hit it in a hazard, which is super. Oh, 17 you can too, which is super rare. But like this green is really perched up. You can see these runoffs. You're okay in this runoff to the right, but over this green is really bad. Severely sloped down into that pond. And then this is going to be a really tricky hole, especially if it gets firm, because that fairway is going to be really tough to hit.
All right, let's head over to 11. Definitely a 10th hole is a difficult start to the second nine, but do you feel like the second nine is more difficult than the front?
Yeah, oh yeah. The back nine, the last four or five, the back nine is way harder, but the last four or five holes are the toughest part of the course. This is starting to assess a really short hole, actually, but you have to hit this fairway. This is the craziest green, like one of the craziest greens I've ever seen.
Look at the bunkering, man, on this fairway.
I hit a wedge. Yeah, so you have to hit the fairways. If you hit the fairway, you got I had 100 yards in.
Do you drive?
And this green, the driver, this green is so crazy. I hit a shot, and it spun down. If you go back a little bit, it was perfect, and it was doing like the Augusta 15th hole thing. And it rolled all the way down in front of these bunkers here.
In front of the bunkers, right. Holy moly!
And I got
it
up and down to tie JT. Another one he was not happy about.
JT's not going to be happy when he goes back and listens to this. He's going to.
I hope he does. Send it to him. But this green, it's really hard to see here. But there's only a few pin positions on the screen. Then the pin was in this little bowl when we played, which it never will be. So
wow.
Anywhere. All these are severe fall offs. And one of the things about this runoff on the right is it's going to run off into the rough, which makes it, you know, 100 times harder to get it up and down. Like this is a hole where you could put it off the green to where I was. It's that severe. So, you know, you have to be really precise. You have to be aggressive to these pins to get it there because you don't want it to come off the green and roll all the way down. Like all this fairway here, this thing won't stop there. Like no chance. So this is another hole where you're going to have a wedge, but you know, you better hit a good shot or you're going to be, you know, having some trouble.
Man, I love Northeast golf. It's the best. I love it so much. Bent catfish divots all week. Just the best.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right, let's go to 12. 466 well, yard par four.
This is a great par four. This hole reminded me a lot of the holes that we played at Oak Hill for the PGA with these bunkers that are. We hit 3 wood off this hole. It was downwind. We could reach the far bunker on the right. Mm-hmm. I hit 3 wood. I had 146 in. And then this green again. This is a theme. It's pretty wild. There's a huge section back to this back right that you can't see from the fairway. But like these runoffs on the right, left, and long are dead. So like you can't. You have to hit the theme of Aromanik is you gotta hit good iron shots. Like you have to because these pins are in these sections that are tough to get to. But if you do get them in there, you're gonna have a good look. You know, this pin back right, this again, it's folks away from you. Tricky little green here,
especially downwind, like you were talking about. That would be tough to kind of shit. You gotta really hit something shaping around to that right pin. It looks like.
Yeah, we I had what the pin was front middle here, and I hit a great shot in there that you know hit and went 30 feet by. You couldn't stop it.
Wow, golly! All right, let's go to 14. Where we're on a par three, it looks like 221 yard par three, couple bare par threes coming down the stretch.
Is this a par three or a par four?
No, we're on 13. I skipped a hole. My bad. Yeah. We're on 13. Yeah, we got a par three coming.
This is a great hole. Yeah. This is a good spot. This is a really short par four hole. I would see them moving up and maybe making drivable. I hit 7 wood off this tee, right in this area, up past these bunkers. And had 130 yards in or so. But this is the thing. I see the movement up. And if you stop here, there's this creepy little out of bounds right there. That sneaks in. It's a fence. And like I'm thinking, I was on that tee going, ugh, so annoying that's there because it's fully in play via driver. You can't reach it if it's the tee is in the back. But I see them moving this up maybe one day, I don't know, to go for it. But like this is an iron or you know 7 wood, 5 wood off the tee, 130 yards to a really slopy green. Yeah, I was right in there, right in here. Really, really slopy green with some tough pins over these sections, and then there's that big runoff to the left. But like you can sort of see this front right section. There's a top part there where you can see there where it runs away there, so you can hit a good wedge if it's a pace or two short of your number, it could kick way to the back. These back pins are elevated on a tier. Really difficult green again.
Wow, man. So as we head over to 14, the par three, that was a long one I just mentioned. It seems like a lot of the prep, man. It's going to be a lot of wedges, but then also getting dialed in with potentially 7 woods into par threes or 5 irons or 4 irons. I know you have a combo set at the top of your bag. It's going to be nice to have that additional height, especially into par threes like this.
Yeah, I'm going to take out my 5 wood that week and have a 7 wood and keep the 55 because I hit it a ton in the practice round. And I think you're going to need hitting your numbers here. Again, it could be wet and this could all change. And, you know, but hitting your numbers here is going to be really important. If they don't get any rain, it's going to be firm. This is the toughest part. Well, other than 17, this is one of the toughest par threes. This section to the right, you can sort of see how like it's severely sloped over this bunker. You're going to have to hit it out over by this bunker and it can kind of funnel in. But we played to a front left pin and we had like 215. So we figured those back pins are going to be, you know, 240. The course gets really difficult from here on in.
All right, let's go to 15. Rather you than me hitting that shot. I was thinking about trying to hit a high cut. I tried to do it a couple times yesterday when I played and didn't cut. I don't think that's what we're looking for on that tee.
They tend to not cut when you draw it. Yeah.
It's the first step. All right, 15 now.
Yeah. This hole's brutal. This is brutal in 18, and they added length. I hit a good drive here at 240 yards in. These bunkers are in play to the right. I mean, this is basically a par five that's a par four. I mean, we were playing basically right on the back edge of every tee, so maybe it could play a little shorter. And it was into the wind. This is a monster green. Like, this green is huge.
We said giving you that.
I get 4 iron in here. Yeah, I had 232 hole, 220 front. It was downwind, actually. And I hit 5 iron in here, 4 iron in here. I almost hit 7 wood. But the Pym is in the front. I mean, this green's got to be 50 yards long, 40 to 50 yards long. So, but it's what I love about this hole is it's so fair. Like some of these long holes where you get up there and there's a pond and you can't, but this is a fair long hole. It's tough, difficult, a big green, slopey green.
Yeah.
I made a 20 footer for par to have JT on this hole. He was pissed again.
I love it. This highlight mix tape is going to go crazy with your practice
round. The match is going to be over. The match is going to be over soon anyway. So we're about done. So we won't have any more comments.
Let's keep on going. All right, we're going to 16. And what I love about the backside of this these closing holes, man, you have to hit these touchy wedge shots onto some really slopey greens, but then you got to hit some big boy long irons, which it's a proper mix for a major championship. It's not just eight irons and seven irons. You're hitting long irons and you're hitting short clubs onto touchy greens.
And this is a par five. This is a really tough fairway to hit. It slopes severely left to right. So these bunkers were sort of in play. They weren't like we figured we were going to cover them, but we hit beautiful drives and they were 1 foot from the rough over here in the right, and they landed just left of this bunker. This is going to be a really tough fairway to hit if it's firm. Really tough.
Or a left right wind direction, that would be tough. Or downwind.
Yes. And so I hit a 7-wood. We all had about 230, 240 in.
Yeah, go up to the green, Charlie. I want to see the second shot here.
So this is, again, if you're going for the green, you can't hit it over these left pins. Yeah, you basically, the pin is where it is now for every one. You got to hit a cut in here to hold the green. This is what makes this course tough, because up in the back of that green, it's an up and over down into the rough. So if you go over the green, which is probably going to do going for it, you're in the rough uphill to the green with an up and over. Really difficult to get that close from there. So like this bunker on the left is pretty good. The bunker on the right is pretty good. It'd be interesting to see if it gets firm. If you can even hold this going in two, but this is a birdie hole. Like you need to take advantage of this, this hole for sure.
All right, let's go to 17, par 3, 229 yards. What it played in 2018. Is it the same distance that y'all played pretty much the other day?
No, it's longer. They got a new tee. You can actually see it. Yeah, there's a tee. There's the green. See the green?
I can't even see it. I need binoculars, man.
This is one of those holes you get on. It looks like a par 4 when you get there.
How far was it?
This hole's brutal. It was I hit 7. It was 240, I would say. And this is all funnels in. This all funnels in the water. You can see there's the green kind of goes up and down. I actually hit 7-wood, bounced off the back of this area, and went onto this tee here, which it wasn't that bad of a shot. And I was not in good shape.
God, you're going to have to hit some damn shots, man, coming down the stretch.
This is going to be tough. I don't know if they'll play that tee every day, because it's sort of in play for the for the 16th hole. I mean, there's the green. This hole's brutal. Like someone's going to be standing on that tee with a one shot leading to major. Like this is going to get serious pretty quick.
As we go to 18, Keegan, I mean, it'll be like playing the golf course for the first time for you, even though you've won at this place. If it's firm, it's going to be like a full different experience.
I hit 6-iron into that green in 2018. So this is a new tee. It doesn't look like this. They've cleared those bushes out. This hole's brutal. I couldn't believe they lengthened this hole, because I hit 4-iron in on Sunday at the BMW and they lengthened it 40 yards. Again, this got to hit this fairway. And then this tree, you have to be left of this bunker. Mm-hmm. You can't reach them, but that tree is like, if you're in the fairway over here to the right, you're chipping it. You can't even, it's not even a cut. Like you're chipping it underneath that tree. If you're anywhere in this bunker, you got to cut it. But this is like the classic Northeast coming in the huge clubhouse. Uh-huh. Just awesome.
Can you even see the green in the second shot?
Oh goodness, no. No. No, this is I had 200 yards in, I hit a good drive here. It was downwind. This is a proper finishing hole. Again, what I love about this course is it's tough, but like there's no tricks up here. It's like this is the hole. We're not going to make it 500 yards uphill and make a green that's up against the water. I don't like that. That's what I love about this golf course is the holes that are hard are really tough, but they're manageable. Like I said, you really can only hit it in the water on 17 and 10. I mean, other than that, there's no real hazards. And I just think that's awesome. I think that this course is
what a great preview, man. That was, yeah. I mean, Charlie, how great was that?
I'm ready to go play. Let's give me a tee time.
I have to say, the guys at Aromnik, we went there. They are closed. They closed in November. They haven't let a single person play the golf course till the turn. And goodness, we went there.
It was perfect.
And they went all out for us. There wasn't a blade of grass that wasn't cut. Like, I told the JT, I go, look at the rough over there. The rough that's like in between the holes and nobody's going to hit it in. Perfectly manicured. Like, I'm thinking we're going to go to, you know, sometimes you go to these major venues early and it's kind of silly because the greens are running at 8. I can't tell you how grateful we were that they were the only people that have played it. There are no divots, of course. And,
wow.
It was spectacular. The course is going to be great. And I hope that they get weather to where the rush can grow up a little bit because it's so early. You know, they signed up to play this PGA when it was in August. Totally different
turn. That's right.
So it's a beautiful place. And they're really proud of their course. They should be. Philadelphia has unbelievable golf courses. So can't wait to get back.
All right, Charlie, bring us in. What do you got for us?
Okay, Keegan, it's well documented on the show. Big time club tinkerer over here. And the collection.
You see that in the back, too, Charlie. Yeah. Somebody else might.
That's right.
Not behind you, Charlie. Behind Keegan.
Yeah, behind Keegan. That's right, of course. I love seeing it, by the way. Yeah, that collection to screw last week. Got a big shipment of new combo set of Srixon irons, fresh set of RTZ wedges that I've been tinkering with all weekend. But here's what I want to know, because you talked about the length of your relationship with Cleveland and Srixon, is there a club that you have just the most amount of nostalgia for, the one you love the most in the history of your relationship? Maybe you still have it in a bag in the garage and you just look at it fondly as you walk by. What club is that from the Cleveland and or Srixon? Okay, great.
I have two. The first one is the Hybord driver. Okay. I used to hit that thing so far. I tell them all the time, let's bring it back. Like, it wasn't straight, but I hit it so far for, you know, probably the longest I've ever hit it was with that Hybord. And then the Cleveland Classic. I keep one in here. Let me see.
That's Smiley's favorite. That's the one that's
me
still,
and Keegs are the guys that played it, man. Goodness. It's me, you, and like Charlie Belgian, wasn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I used it forever. Like, even after, like, they had, like, millions of other drivers out, I couldn't get rid of it. I have it here somewhere. I don't know what I did with it, but those are the ones.
Remember, Keegan, with the Cleveland Classic, sometimes the piece that was in the back part of the club would sometimes pop off, and so but you couldn't really glue it back on, and if you did, it didn't stay there. So but it would change the sound of the club. But it didn't change like the ball flight or anything, so you're just like, whatever, I guess this is what I got now. But I just kept on stockpiling these Cleveland Classic drivers, and there was a huge difference between some of the heads. Like, there was a certain one that had like a line underneath the degree of the loft, and that was the driver. Like, any other one was not the right one.
Yeah, I remember that now. I love those clubs. And then the high bore would look so ridiculous, but I loved it.
And if you had to bring back any club from Cleveland golf, which one would you bring back?
I'd bring back the high bore. I tell them all the time. Let's make one up. I want to hit it. I mean, I still have some when I look at it. I'm like, that looks crazy. It made the loudest noise. And then they had the Hybord. I think they call it the Hybord Monster. That was the one. I just remember that was just so, the thing like sounded ridiculous. It was great.
I swear a bear is not attacking me over here. I keep looking over here because actually Cleveland is bringing back a fan favorite. It's the original 588 wedge. And we actually have it right here. So I wanted to show you this.
Look at this.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, sure.
I know you got to see these recent wedges on the most recent tour shoot that we did. I mean, that was a wedge that kind of shaped professional golf since 1988 when Roger Cleveland invented this bad boy. Of course, happy to have him back with Cleveland Golf. But how about the 588s coming back?
So cool. It was so cool that, like, hearing Roger Cleveland talk about it and go through the intricacies of like the wedge and how, what he did. And honestly, when you look at that wedge, it's like, looks like it's like art or something.
Oh, I know.
Like everything about it is just so great. It's, I think you'll never forget, like as a kid, the first time you got one of those, like that was a big deal. That was big doings when you could get a new 588 wedge.
I love it. Keegan, on the topic of the short game, you're good buddies with Jason Duffner, who is somewhat, he's got like a legend that's been growing on the show. Because every time we talk to a player about best short games, you mentioned some references here, he comes up in some way, shape, or form. So I want to know, what's the best around the green shot you've ever seen Jason Duffner hit?
So Jason Duffner, I basically went to Chuck Cook, his coach, because of how great of a chipper he was. And I remember I went to, I guess this is, I don't know the exact, an exact thing, but I have two stories. One, I went early to Pinehurst with Chuck Cook and Duffner. And like, we just like went early and just chipped around the greens. And he was hitting these shots. I couldn't get it on the green. And he's hitting these, like, again, never hits a flop shot. And just like really long and like, just, I was just stunned with the, how great of a chipper this guy was. Like just insanely talented in every way around the greens. Like I couldn't believe it. But my favorite story that Duffner told me is, I don't, Matt Every doesn't care to tell him the story, but they were at, his Duffner's in the grill after the round, telling everybody about it. Duffner, he was playing with Every, and they were, it was the old like 11th hole, and they were in the front section, and Every went and putted his first, putted up by the green, and Duffner said to him, "Let me show you how a Ryder Cup does it." And he grabbed his wedge and he chipped it in. "Let me show you how a Ryder Cupper does it."
This is actually the second time we've had a Duffner chipping story, and I guess the last 2 weeks, because Keith Mitchell was on recently, and he was saying he wanted to ask Duff how to hit a certain shot, and Keith hands him his own wedge, and Duffner just walks up without saying a word, just picks it up, chips it right in, just hands it back, and walks away without saying a word. Just amazing. Yeah, just amazing stuff.
This isn't Jason Duffner's, but it's Phil Mickelson chipping story. I was with him early at Augusta one time, and we were over the back of the third hole at Augusta. This is before they redid it. And I was having the hardest time hitting this chip shot. This is the front, so it would have been the front left pin. I was over the back, so it's big impossible. Sweeper. It's impossible. So he's taking lefties, these shots, chipping them to a foot. We're playing a chipping game. He's taking a bunch of money off me. And then after, I'm like, teach me how you chip that. And I'm like, it's so much easier for you because you're lefty. It's like you're on the upslope and you're chipping it. So he goes, grabs my wedge right-handed, gets over it, and right-handed goes and chips it in the hole.
No.
Like, just, he grabbed it. Like, I can't even get it on the green. He goes, "Give me your wedge," because I'm telling him it's easier lefty. Grabs it right-handed, okay, and chipped it straight in the hole. Worst thing that could ever happen to me was him do that. But it was stunning. Like, I couldn't believe it.
That is so good. We got a library of good ones on the show. We got to make up like a supercut of all the best short game stories we've heard about Duff, Hill, and the like. All right, last one from me, Keegan, before Smiley closes us out, is we are, of course, we're proud dads on the show. We've got young kids. We're a little earlier into fatherhood than where you are right now. But, you know, kids starting to play golf and doing all sorts of activities. So what I want to know is, what is the current slate of activities for Logan and Cooper look like? And where's your role? Are you a coach, carpool driver, caddy? Like, I want to know, like, what that looks like at your stage so we can prepare for it.
So I'm the assistant coach on his soccer team. They're undefeated. My youngest, Cooper, plays soccer. He's five. So, you know, it's just madness. I love it. I sit there and laugh the whole time. And then actually right when I get off with you guys, I'm taking Logan to bat. He's super into basketball. So we're going to go to a basketball practice. I can't get enough of it. Like I just can't. Like I can't. I have a little chipping green at my house. We're out there chipping. My favorite thing in the world to do is be a dad. And like part of me, I have this weird part of me now that's like, I can't wait to be done playing golf so I can just focus. Like I'm jealous of you guys that you get to do this. Like I'm going on the road for 3 weeks here, and I know I'm going to miss, you know, 10 soccer games, basketball. So I try to cherish these moments as much as I can, because I love it. And watching them they love golf. Watching them, you know, at the par threes is the greatest, and being a dad is the best.
I texted Smiley's last week, like for the first time ever, took the three. The 3 year old's been, he loves it, but he had an hour worth of drivers 2 days ago. And I was like, this is the proudest I'm ever going to get, Smiley. And it's only going to get better from here. And about as good as it gets. So I love that so much, great. Keegan.
Keegan, I think one of the cool parts of being the Ryder Cup captain is that you get to bring people alongside you. You know, when I saw Jamie Webmark and John Curran and Mike Ballo all at the Ryder Cup this past year, that was the cool moment for me. Of course, I know all these guys and I know how important they are to you. Of course, the Ryder Cup, it didn't go the way you wanted it to. But looking back now, and having those memories and having the guys that you've been your best friends in the game of golf and professional golf, and will always be there for you, whether you're playing good or bad, whether you win the Ryder Cup or lose the Ryder Cup. Still, what was it like to have those guys alongside you in those memories?
Well, it was everything. It was so cool because, you know, it was fun for them to see me in that environment.
Yeah.
They don't see that side of me. You know, a lot of them, like, they were like, I don't know who you are. This is a different person. But being out there and like them being in the team room, I included everybody in the team room. So they're in the team room. They're part of the team. And to be in there and, you know, be a part of all the buildup, be a part of, you know, I made a bunch of videos for the guys for them to be a part of that. You know, to see the emotion, to be inside the ropes at a thing like that. 'Cause these guys all played in the tour. But this is what I tell. This is what I tell people that have played in the Ryder Cup, like JJ Spahn, the rookies. There's a world that people don't know about, and you're a part of it now. Like the PGA Tour player, they don't know what it's like to stand on that 17th hole at Bethpage Black in the singles. Like that. Mm-hmm. That's a different world, and you join this club of Tiger Woods, Jack Nicklaus, that you can share these moments with, that you can't describe them, and you can't know what it's like unless you're standing on that tee. And I was really happy that these guys got to share that with me. John, I've been, you know, we've been, you know, best friends for forever, and we've grown up together. We best man at each other's wedding. To be right there, he was my car driver. Him to be right there through the good and the bad. It was really great and really special, and something that when I got the job, I never even thought of. And everyone thought, like, okay, I can, you know, and what was incredible is how seriously they took their job. They were car drivers, and they would go at night after we were done. They would go, all right, Scotty Scheffler, this is on like Tuesday. Scotty Scheffler won his match on 15. What's the fastest way we can get him home? And they would go and time their routes throughout the course. And they would go, okay, we're on 16, but it's blocked on 17. Where do we go? And so it was crazy. So I would say to John, we'd be on, you know, 14. I go, I got to get to the 8th hole. Bang. He'd drive. He goes, okay, you can go through this path and we're there. So it meant the world to me. Those guys mean the world to me. I would do anything for them as they would do anything for me.
Did being the Ryder Cup captain help you at all in now being an assistant captain for all of these soccer matches? Do you feel like you're more prepared to talk to 5-year-olds now than maybe if you didn't have this Ryder Cup position? Do you feel like you can communicate to them? You know, before, do you think you've been able to handle this?
Yeah, after being that Ryder Cup captain, like I've always been like super competitive with the kids, and I hate when it's everyone gets a trophy and all this stuff. But now I'm like, give everyone a trophy and let everybody win. I don't give it. Like, it's fine by me. Yeah, like I'm done with the ripping your heart out stuff. So I'm definitely a totally different person than I was before this.
Well, we're proud of you, Keegan. Of course, whether you win or lose on the golf course, we enjoyed watching you be a captain. You handled yourself incredibly well throughout that entire experience. And we're looking forward to seeing you be a 2-time champion at Arana Make, and maybe they'll just make you a lifetime member at the end of this
thing. I would love that.
Because that was an incredible preview, and we're just appreciative of your time, man.
Thank you, boys.
We'll see you next week on the Golf Channel. This has been The Smiley Show.
You know, I listen to this podcast. It's really cool. And
all of our lovely fans and subscribers, but make sure you like and subscribe.
It's cool to see what you guys are doing. I know golf fans appreciate it, but we do too. So please keep it up.
For all the good people of YouTube.
like and subscribe.
You guys have some good takes, so I'm happy to come on and shoot the